Good afternoon, everybody, or good morning, depending on your time zone. Good evening. We got a special show today, and we're going to pull out a little Michael Buffer because he may show up at this thing. So let's get ready to talk golf. Oh, God, that's awful. Anyway, joining me on the show today is a guy I worked with for an awful long time at the Associated Press. He was my editor back then. Great editor. Taught me a whole lot about covering all sorts of sports, not just basketball, which is kind of where I've hung my hat. His name is Ron Cyrak. He's a contributor to the Golf Channel. He spent 18 years at the AP. He spent 18 years at the Golf Digest, and he's now working out of roncyrak.com. Ron, thanks for coming aboard the show.
It's a pleasure to be back working with you again, Chris.
Well, you know, some things, you know, you never know when you're going to circle back to guys that you came up in the business with. And also joining us on the show is Scott Cooley. He's my editor. He's also the odds consultant, the chief odds consultant for BetDSI.com. BetDSI.com is the company that I work for and that pays the bills and that sponsors this show. So, Scott, welcome to the program. And Scott, I want to start with you because you did a podcast yesterday with Clark Burrows, and you talked a little bit about the course where this $9 million match is being played. And what are some of the things you learned from talking with Clark yesterday on the air?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the main thing is they're gonna set this up to be very friendly, obviously, for the viewers, for the fans. These guys, they want to see birdies, they want to see eagles, they want to see some really good entertainment. So I think it's a more of a, you know, Ron can speak of this, I'm sure, but, you know, I think it's a little bit of a more friendly course, a little open and, you know, they're not going to grow up the rough or anything to make it too difficult. And I know that Tiger and Phil had a press conference yesterday, and they already know where the pin placements are. So that's going to be a big advantage where they don't have to study different portions of the green that they're not going to be, or hopefully not going to be on. And, you know, one of the most interesting things I thought was just really unique was, I guess, Frank Clark Burrows, who played on the PGA Tour for 11 years. He mentioned that he had been out there a few times, and what tickled me was that when you come in after your round and you get, you know, a beverage or some food, you go into the restaurant and they don't have menus. You just tell the wait staff what you want. You can order sushi, you can order lasagna, you can order a burger, you can order a pizza, anything you want, and they make it for you. I thought that was pretty special.
And Ron, you were talking right before we went on the air about that this may be the most exclusive golf course in America. Can you talk a little bit about that and why you would say that?
Yeah, it might be the least played golf course on the planet. It's really pretty much the high rollers are there, and there's an hour between tee times, which means you're probably only going to get about maybe four or five groups a day on the golf course. It's going to be worth watching just to see the golf course, because for a lot of people, they've never seen this place before. Very, very few people have. And I do think, you know, I agree that the course is going to be set up in a very score-friendly sort of way. The other thing about the format that's going to be compelling is that it's match play. You know, match play, you don't need great golf to have a great match in match play. It's not one 18-hole match, it's 18 one-hole matches. And match play really encourages a gambling style of play. If you hit the ball off the planet, and both of these guys are known to hit the golf ball off the planet on occasion, it only costs you one hole. It doesn't cost you five or six strokes. So you're going to see them freewheeling it, and you're going to see them really, really attacking the golf course. And I also agree that they're going to set this up in a very scoring-friendly way.
Yeah, I'm looking at a photo of the golf course on golfdigest.com. And it's a photo that's a couple years old. This is in Las Vegas, and the area around it has been built up. But when they built this thing, it's surrounded by nothing but desert. For acres and acres around it, there's nothing but desert. But I guess they dug some pretty deep wells because there is a lot of water sprinkled around the course. And, you know, they find ways to get things done in Vegas. And a lot of times that's because they build big hotels there because a lot of people like to gamble, but a lot of people don't always gamble all that well. But Let's turn to the gambling aspect of this match and look at some of the stuff that's up on the board, because really, you know, some interesting bets. And Ron, I want to start. The first one is, will there be an eagle? And the odds are 5-1 that there will be an eagle. I'm about to put a little money on that one myself, because, like you said, they're going to make it player friendly, and as competitive as these guys are, you know, there should be an over under on how many eagles, not whether there'll be one. Would you agree?
Yeah, and they're both long hitters, you know, so they're going to be having probably irons into par five holes. So these guys are really virtually eagle machines. Of all the bets that I've seen, that's the one to me that looks like the most consumer friendly, I'd have to say.
Okay, and then let's talk about three putts, because certainly all these guys, any golfer is capable of a three putt. Right now, Phil Mickelson is 7-1 to record a three putt, and Tiger Woods is 8-1 to record a three putt. Ron, how do you feel about those wagers?
Well, first off, I think Phil is more likely to three-putt than Tiger is. Tiger, in this comeback season this year, putted very, very solidly. And at the peak, he was one of the great putters of all time, particularly great short putters. It was him and Jack Nicklaus. Mickelson makes a lot of 20, 25-foot putts, but he misses a fair number of 5- and 6-foot putts. And that's where you three-putt. It's missing that second putt in that sort of 3-, 4-, 5-foot range. So if I was going to go with somebody to three-putt, Mickelson's the guy who's more likely to do it.
Yeah, well, if I saw for Scott. Go ahead,
sorry.
Scott. I'm sorry.
I'd like to interject on that note from a bookmaking standpoint. I will note that it says, will Phil Mickelson record an official three putt? And, you know, Ron, you can speak to this, but we can assume there's going to be a lot of, you know, conceded putts, you know, a lot of pick the ball up, that kind of thing. So I think that's why the odds makers there were maybe a little more generous on the three putt side, because, you know, it's only going to really come into play if somebody is going to win a hole on a three putt, and so I think that could, you know, factor into the thought of it.
I think that's a great point. That's an absolutely great point. I think the likelihood of where we would see a three-putt might be on one of those par five holes when he's got an eagle putt and he rams it, you know, 6 feet past the hole and then has to putt the one coming back and misses. But you're right, in match play, we're going to see a fair number of concessions.
Yeah, that actually the whole concessions, the over-under is 2.5. And depending on – look, it's golf. You know, one guy can hit it into the brush, one guy can hit it into the water, and you're going to get a whole concession. So at 2.5, Ron, in terms of whole concessions, what do you think? The odds are short either way. They're minus 115 either way. But where do you think that one falls on whole concessions at 2.5?
I think I would take the over on that. You know, I think that we're going to see some of those in there, because as I said, they're both gambling kind of golfers, and they're both really, really are going to gamble in this match and be very, very aggressive and attack the course. And I think there's a chance that we're going to see several holes end up with one of the guy's golf ball in his pocket and no longer completing.
Yeah, and they did make a side bet yesterday, $100,000 on the first hole, and then Tiger said double it, and Phil said, yeah, you're on, and so side betting is going to be, and these guys are going to be mic'd up. Side betting is probably going to be a big part of this. Of course, the $9 million, neither guy needs the money, but the $9 million first prize, winner take all, is certainly kind of interesting. Scott, you speak to this. The over-under on side bets is 12.5. Why is it so high?
Because we've got Phil Mickelson playing a match play game against his arch rival. That's why. Phil, we know Phil loves to gamble. He is a tried and true gambler on any sport, any competition. Anytime there's two people competing, Phil's going to bet on it. So I think we could see even more than that. I mean, I'm guessing Phil's going to try to make a side bet on, you know, every hole at least. And we've already, you know, So now you're only up against 11.5. The bookmakers will officially grade when that happens on the first hole, the $200,000 birdie side bet. But you're essentially already, at 11.5. You have to get to 12 now to win that if you take the over. And another one of our props has already cashed as well. If congratulations to the bettors that took the over on the amount of largest side bet, because we oddsmakers put up a number of 50,000. And clearly that quadrupled that without even the match starting yet.
Yeah, these guys could bet on every single shot. The over-under maybe should be around 50.
You're going to see the first time somebody misses a green, the other guy is going to say, I bet you can't make up and down from there. So it's mm-hmm. going to be constant. They got the right two guys for this. I mean, these guys both love to gamble. I've talked to young players, and Mickelson will invite them to play a practice round before a tournament, and they're really excited. Oh, I get to play a practice round with Phil. And then they find out it's at least $1,000 as a buy-in for the for the practice round match. There's going to be some wagering in that match.
Yeah, that happens on airplanes in the NBA. The veterans take on the rookies, and they tell them, "Look, you got to sit back here and play bourrée with us." And the buy-in is $5,000, and we play for these amount of stakes. And the rookies are like, "Wait a minute, I don't have $5,000. I'm on a rookie contract. I'm not making $26 million." And they're like, "Shut up, kid. Sit down, and play cards." I had Jim McElvain on the program few weeks back, and he was talking about how when he was a rookie, he was on the same team with Scott Skiles, and Scott tried to take all his rookie money on the airplane, and they actually made a side bet where Jim said, "Hey, Scott, you're an old ass man. I'll bet you all my rookie money that you're on the injured list at the end of the season. You're too old to play 82 games this season." And Scott took the bet, and sure enough, when the playoffs rolled around, Scott was injured, and Jimmy Mac doubled up his money, and it was a pretty substantial amount of significant amount of money for Jim, especially being that it was his rookie season. But gambling stories are legend in the sporting world, because a lot of this stuff takes place on golf courses, on team airplanes, in hotel rooms. There's poker games, and the stakes can get pretty large given the amount of salary that professional athletes make. Ron, what's kind of your best golf betting story that you've ever heard?
Oh, geez, that's a hard one to come up with. One of the ones, and this could play out here, we could see something like this here, is I did hear what Tiger did once, playing with somebody, and they made a bet on who was going to hit the fairway, and it was like $1,000, and the first guy drove, and I think it was David Duval, and missed the fairway in the rough. So now all Tiger's got to do is put it in the fairway, and he wins the bet, and he took out a 7-iron and just sort of hit a punch shot right down the middle. So that could create some bad blood.
And Scott, same question. You love playing golf. You don't play at the same stakes that the pros play, but what's your best gambling story?
Well, we've had some epic ones where there's, guys just falter under pressure, up five, with eight holes to play, that kind of thing. But, as my best gambling story is a hole-in-one story. With our golf group that I played with for many years out in California, San Diego, Torrey Pines, we always had a deal that a lot of times you get a hole in one and you buy drinks for everybody or whatever, but ours didn't stop there. It was you bought drinks for everybody in your group until they said stop. So one night I was playing, or one day we were playing out in the Bay Area of California at a golf course called Cinnabar Hills in South San Jose, and lo and behold, got my second hole in one of my amateur golf career. And fantastic shot, about 217-yard par 3, and so ecstatic. And, about 8 hours later and $460 lighter in the pocket, our night ended. So that was a good story that I've got for that.
Yeah. Chris, I'll tell you, it's not exactly a gambling story, but a hole-in-one story. Derek Lawrenson, who's a British journalist that I know, is playing in a charity outing, and they have a hole, and the hole-in-one prize is a Lamborghini, and he makes a hole-in-one, and to accept the prize, he had to turn pro because it was over the limit you're legally allowed to accept in winning. So he turned pro on the spot to take the car. So.
Yeah, well. Wow. Yeah, you know, having two Lamborghinis in my garage, I know exactly what he's talking about. These cars go really, really fast. I keep them next to the Oldsmobile. So, but Ron, you know, we were talking on the phone a little bit a couple of days ago, and you said, "Man, what? I wish they had done this 6, 7, 8 years ago." Because even though both of these golfers are really popular. There's younger guys out there, you know, you name them, Rory McIlroy, Roy Jordan, you know, anybody you want to talk about who could probably put on a more compelling match. But do you think the star power of Phil versus Tiger is going to lead to pay-per-view buys? Pay-per-view buys do really well with boxing and with mixed martial arts, but with golf, you know, I'm not so sure that whoever's sponsoring this is going to recoup their investment.
It's going to be fascinating to see because, you know, one of the best tweets that I saw is, you know, I guess the buy-in's 1999 to get it, and somebody said 1999, that would have been a great year for this match. And it would have. I mean, the one thing that and this is why people might be interested in this, really, first off, they're two very extremely compelling people. They are of their generation, not only the best and the second best player of their generation, but they were the two most popular players of their generation, and their fans don't overlap. You know, it's almost like, you know, Rolling Stones versus the Beatles here. Particularly when Mickelson played in the New York City market, anywhere in there on Long Island, Westchester County, Bergen County in New Jersey, the fans are overwhelmingly pro Mickelson. Other parts of the country were pro Tiger. So the fans are really, really passionate. And the one thing we were denied in the Tiger Woods Phil Mickelson era, they never had an epic Sunday showdown on the last round, a major championship, the way Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson did at Turnberry in 77. So, you know, I think people still have that sort of hunger that they, you know, what if both guys show up and they both do have their A game and they're really hitting on all cylinders. And we saw some remarkable golf from both of them this year, although we also saw, certainly from Mickelson, some bad golf as well. I'm going to be fascinated to see how many people actually do buy this. Somebody said to me, you know, it's going to be like those people who, when the polls come around and they ask you who you're going to vote for, say they're not going to vote for a certain person, and then they end up voting for him, but not telling anybody. And there may be people who are going to say, oh, no, I'm not going to watch it, but they will.
Mm-hmm. And what's the buy on this? What's the price?
$19.99.
Yeah, compared to boxing, that's not bad. It'll cost you $89 or $100, depending on who's fighting, to watch a good boxing match or a good mixed martial arts MMA match. So, I want to see how that plays out because it seems like an awful big risk for the sponsors. But let's go back to some of the odds, and it gives me an opportunity to put in a plug. This show lives on GetMoreSports.com, but the guys paying the bills are out of Costa Rica, BetDSI.com. This is one of the largest sports books in the world. And if you go to BetDSI.com, or if you're overseas, you have to go to BetDSI.eu, and you use the bonus code BBALL1000, that's all capital letters, BBALL1000, they'll match up to $1,000 right off the bat on your initial deposit. So you put in $1,000 or whatever the local currency equivalent is of $1,000, you're going to get it matched right away. And then that's a hell of a lot of free money to play around with. And, you know, you could play around with it on this, or you could play around with it on any other sport. I put in a $10 bet on basketball the other night, and I picked, it was a 17 parlay, and I hit 6 of them, which means I lost $10 instead of winning $980. But the Sacramento Kings will pay the price for that one. They lost by 25 to Houston. Man, I went 6 for 7. You know, those are tough, but sometimes you look at the board and you're like, oh, easy, 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 easy. I'm going to try this. And so I try them small. I try them with 10. Anyway, let's get back to this, the odds that are up here. And I'm going to throw this one to you first, Ron. When will the match be closed out by the winner? And the longest odds are hole number 13 or earlier, and that's 500-1. On hole 14, it's 250-1. Hole 15 is 100-1. Hole 16 is 5-1. 17 is 3-1. And having it close out in a playoff is actually plus 250, which is the equivalent of 5-2. You know both these guys, and you've covered both these guys for a heck of a long time. First of all, who do you like in this match, Ron? And second of all, how soon do you think it's going to end?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that Tiger Woods has owned a room in Phil Mickelson's head for 25 years. And, Tiger's my favorite here. And Tiger's just played very, very – I mean, Tiger could have won 6 or 7 tournaments this year, and he just had some trouble closing them out on Sundays and finally got the win at the Tour Championship. So I do think Tiger's playing better. And of those odds that you reeled off, I would like, Tiger closing it out on 15, I think is a possibility.
That's 10-1. That's not a bad bet. Scott, what about you? Who do you like in this match, and how soon do you think it's going to end, and do you think it's going to go to a playoff?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I'm a big Phil Mickelson fan, first and foremost, so that's how I'm going to pick the win. And I think that, the odds are interesting in that, we had them, they climbed as high as, minus 220 for Tiger. These odds have been up just the straight up winner for 3 months or 4 months ever since it was announced. And so when Tiger was playing well, everybody's betting on Tiger, and Phil was playing poorly, so they were fading him. However, over the last 48 hours, we've seen those numbers come back down a little bit. I think currently we're at Tiger minus 175, 180, and then Phil plus 135, 140. People are seeing, recognizing this value on Phil Mickelson. And, I'd love to hear Ron's thoughts on this. But, in a match play event where, you're not calculating the scores and keeping strokes, really anything can happen. We see this at, the WGC match play event, and you see big favorites losing all the time because I think they asked Justin Thomas or Ricky the other day, and they said, who do you think is going to win? And the guy said, you really never know. You don't know which guy is going to have it that day. We all go out some days, and we just, our swing is lost. We can't find it, and we play poorly. And you can go out literally the very next day and, shoot a 59. And you just don't, golf is just strange in that way. So I think there is a lot of value betting on Phil Mickelson in that scenario. And to me, Phil is the ultimate competitor. Both these guys are, obviously uber competitors. But Phil wants this so badly. I think, he all the times he's been beaten by Tiger, all the times that, he finished runner-up and played second fiddle. If he can have this one thing that, he can hang on his hat for the next year or whenever they do it again, he would just be grinning for 365 stages straight. So I think that little extra motivation, and we don't know what kind of form these guys are in. Tiger played well this season and played well at the, Tour Championship and stuff like that, but, these guys haven't played for, a month or so. I think Phil, played out in California the last time. We don't know where their games are at right now, so I think it's really difficult to put a price in. To me, this is maybe more of a toss-up. Maybe Tiger's a minus 130 or minus 140 favorite, but I do think there's some value in Phil right now.
I agree there is value with Phil, and for exactly all those points, which is, I remember talking to Mickelson about 3-4 years ago, and he said his challenge right now is maintaining focus for 72 holes over 4 days of competition, and that's not going to be a problem. This is just going to be a one-day mm-hmm. thing. So I do think that's to Phil's advantage there, that he doesn't have to go out and do it a couple of days in a row.
That's a great point.
And Ron, there's a couple of holes that are featured on the board. Will either player drive the green on hole number 11? Yes is plus 275 and no is minus 350. You're familiar with the course. Hole number 11, is it a drivable par 4?
Well, you know, that's the tricky thing about golf. It depends on how they set the course up. You know, they can put the tees wherever they want. They're going to put it someplace so that it's within the wheelhouse for both of them. They're going to make it. You know, they may play it as, you know, at 310, 315, so that it is possible. I expect also, you know, there's a par 5 on the back 9, number 16, that's like 625 yards long. I would be stunned if they play it at that distance. I think that they're going to move the tee up so that they both have a chance to get on the green in two shots. Again, they're going to do everything they can to make this scoring friendly.
Mm-hmm. And also there's odds up on the longest drive on hole number 4, and it has to be a fairway in regulation to qualify. Again, the odds are short. Phil is minus 105 and Tiger is minus 135. Neither of these guys are the boomers that they once were. But Ron, what about hole number 4, and why did they pick that hole for the longest drive?
Well, I think that one of the reasons is going to be that they're going to it's going to be set up with a generous fairway, so that putting that ball in the fairway is going to be not as much of a challenge as it might be in a lot of regular PGA Tour events. This is going to be one of the most fascinating bets, because these are two of the longest hitters, and then all these kids came along and starting to hit it by them. I mean, you know, neither of them hit it where Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy hit it right now, or Cam Champion. But they both are still capable. They both have a lot left in the gas tank, and they get a lot of club speed. Tiger was among the leaders on Pro Tour this year, PGA Tour, in club head speed. So he can still get it out there a good piece. But it is going to be a challenge. The challenge for both of them is putting the ball in the fairway. But as I said, they're going to cut that fairway generous so that they have a good chance of putting it in play.
And Ron, you've covered literally hundreds of golf tournaments, seen you know, Senior Tour, Women's Tour, PGA Tour, Senior Tour. I'm curious, what's the longest drive you've ever seen hit in competition? Who did it? Where did it happen?
Well, I can think of a couple, and one was number one at the Oakmont in the U.S. Open a couple years ago. Dustin Johnson, when he won it, on the first hole on Sunday, drove at 376, and that's the year that Justin Johnson later on that front nine was penalized two strokes because his ball moved a 16th of an inch on the green. And somebody tweeted, the USGA cares more about a ball rolling a 16th of an inch than it going 376 yards. I've also seen Rory McIlroy hit a couple in the high 380s, 390 range in there. I always thought Greg Norman was the greatest driver of the golf ball I ever saw, for being long and straight. But McIlroy, when he has his A game with the driver, is the best I've ever seen. He just crushes it.
Yeah, I kind of like watching. I love watching him, but I love watching Dustin Johnson kill the ball off the tee. As a guy who hits the ball, you know, usually 360, 370, I can't believe he's getting 15 extra yards on me, you know.
You know, Chris, I just thought, too, of two quick stories involving betting, and they both involve caddies. And, you know, in Britain, sports gambling's been legal for a long time there, and the caddies, when they over for the British Open, love to bet. And you can get every kind of bet going. 1998, Mark O'Meara's won the British Open at Royal Birkdale. His caddy, Jerry Higginbotham, made more money that week in the betting parlors than he made in his salary for caddying for the winner of the British Open. And one of the things I love when I go to the Women's British Open, they'll take, you know, you can bet on a three-ball match, and they have spreads on everything. But the caddies know more about the game than some of the British bookmakers do. And, I mean, they know which players don't like each other and play either better or worse against each other. And I've seen a lot of caddies go over to the British Open and come back with more money they picked up at the betting parlors than they picked up from their player.
Yeah, caddies give a lot of local knowledge. I know a caddy who works out of Leawood Golf Club in Crestwood, New York, who gave me a spectacular scouting report on what was going to go down at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock this year, because he knows all the caddies who work the New York circuit, and he said they've got this thing tricked up. They got the grass up at 2 feet, and it's been raining all spring, and anybody who misses the fairway is going to need a sickle to get their ball out of there. And he said, I'm telling you, the winning score is going to be like two over. And what turned out to happen that day is they lost. I think it's number 14. They lost it again because the wind shifted off the ocean, and it was another disaster at Shinnecock. But I think the winning score did turn out to be about one over. So caddies and local knowledge, man, you just can't discount that stuff.
That's one of the tricky things. It's one of the things that makes golf one of the trickiest sports to bet on, because there are so many outside factors that come into things. I mean, you know, what if I remember Tiger used to do a made for TV thing on Monday nights. It was usually in August. It was called the Battle at Bighorn, and it was out in the desert in Palm Springs. And I remember going out to cover one that was going to be David Duval and Kari Webb against Tiger Woods and Annika Sorenstam. And the idea of the last three holes were going to end under the lights. They had grandstands set up, lights set up for the finish. And 20 minutes before they teed off, the wind came up. And all of a sudden now, you got a 25-mile-an-hour wind blowing through the desert there. And it made conditions really, really difficult. That's something, too, you don't know. I mean, you don't know what kind of weather might show up on Friday when they're playing this match.
Mm-hmm. And Scott, when you're working with the guys at the book, you're factoring in most in setting the odds for this match.
You know, it's difficult. I mean, this is an unprecedented event. So, I mean, it's hard to, especially some of the, you know, the more, you know, the gimmicky props. I mean, but you know, you're always looking at past, you know, performances and results and stats, just like they, you know, they do for every odds, you know, odds line they set. You know, it's all about precedent and how the public is going to react to the numbers. Certainly, one of the more popular bets has been, you know, the three putts. You know, people are seeing plus money there and taking the three putts all day. So, it's a bit of a guessing game in a situation like this, because it's something that's never happened, and you know, you don't know exactly what we're going to see on TV or what we aren't. But it sounds like, you know, this is a made for TV, a made for gambling event, and so I know that BetDSI was really proud to roll out, you know, a big prop sheet, a Super Bowl size prop sheet of offers.
Mm-hmm. And Ron, I want to look ahead to next season. You know, you're covering the tour, the PGA Tour, especially year after year after year, and we've seen some guys really jump out. Jonathan Vegas had a nice year. Xander Schauffele had a really nice year. Who's a golfer to watch who's going to come out of nowhere next year and be maybe a top 10 guy or at least a tour championship guy by the time they finish up the year in Atlanta?
Well, you know, they're not exactly coming out of nowhere, but two guys that I think are going to make a real run at being number one in the world and being that good are Jon Rahm of Spain and Tommy Fleetwood of England. They both played really. I mean, Fleetwood, you probably remember, he's the guy who's got hair to his shoulders,
and
he's a little guy. He's a little guy, kills the ball, crushes the ball, and he's also a tough kid. He's from Southport, England, and I've done several British Opens over there, and that's a tough little town to grow up in. I think those two are going to emerge from somewhere and really do something special. Golf's at an interesting point right now. It's sort of like that period between Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods, where there was a lot of really, really good golfers out there, Curtis Strange, Nick Price, Ernie Els, Greg Norman, Nick Faldo, but there wasn't that overwhelmingly dominant golfer. We're waiting for that person to come along. I'm not sure he's on any given week, six or seven or eight of those guys out there can be the best player in the world, Jordan Spieth, McIlroy, Justin Thomas. Right now, we're waiting to see who's going to be the next person to go out and have a breakout year, and I like both Rahm and Fleetwood.
And Scott, how about you? Who's the guy that you're kind of keeping your eye on going into the 2019 PGA season?
Yeah, it's actually somebody you mentioned, Chris. Xander Schauffele is a guy I was high on this last year. You know, he won a few tournaments, and he was so close in the U.S. Open to winning that. And I can remember this stroke of poise that he had, and I'm sure you recall this, Ron, and probably you too, Chris, but whenever he's right in the thick of things right there, I think it was on the 18th hole, and he's coming in, and he's a birdie or something, and, you know, this baby starts crying behind him, and, you know, he kind of looks, he steps off the shot, and you know, gives a laugh, and to me, that just showed how comfortable he was. The spotlight wasn't too big for him, the pressure wasn't too big for him, and this kid has just an insane game that I think is going to translate into many, many more wins and some majors very soon.
I thought Xander should have been on the U.S. Ryder Cup team because, he's a big-game player. He's had two good U.S. Opens. He's had a good British Open. He's the kind of guy who does play his best golf in the major championships the way Brooks Koepka does. He should have been on that Ryder Cup team.
Absolutely. That was a big snub.
And just shifting gears a little bit, Ron, with the LPGA, we've seen so many great golfers come out of Korea. They're playing a lot of the LPGA events. They're playing a few of them over in Asia at different places. And there's so few American golfers. There's certainly no American golfer that's capturing the public's imagination. But there's a ton of Korean golfers that are, you know, they're shooting 61, 62, 63. Where do you see the LPGA going over the next 5 or 6 years to try to draw back the American audience that has kind of been lost to the Asian audience?
Well, if it wasn't for Asia, I'm not sure the LPGA would have made it through the Great Recession. They bottomed out in 2010 with 23 tournaments. That was a combination of the previous commissioner being a disaster and then the recession hit. And Mike Wan's done an amazing job of bringing the tour back from that. But the largest single revenue stream the LPGA has is Korean TV money, and that really carried them through the depths. American golf, you know, Chris, when I first started covering the LPGA, 90% of the players were American, 90% of the winners are American. Now, 40% of the players are American, and 40% of the winners are American. Now, this year, 9 different Americans won on the LPGA. That sort of went under the radar. That's the most by any country. 7 Koreans won. And I think an interesting battle that's going to be next year, Arya Jutanagarn, who's from Thailand, she's 22 years old, doesn't carry a driver, and hits her 3-wood like 265, hits her 2-iron 240. She won 3 times this year, including the Women's U.S. Open. She's emerging as a superstar. And the other one to see, I was just in Naples, Florida for the the Tour Championship, and it was won by Lexi Thompson, 23-year-old American, who did an interesting thing this year. She took a month off in the middle of the season to really just emotionally regroup. She's lived her entire life in the golf bubble. She qualified for the U.S. Women's Open when she was 12 years old. And she's, I think, went through some mental regrouping. She's enormously gifted. But I think Lexi Thompson is who the future of American women's golf is going to hang their hat on. And I think that she's going to do something special next year. She seems to be mentally in a very good place right now.
Yeah, great stuff from both of you guys, and gives me one more chance to plug this show and our sponsor. You know, that sports betting tips with Chris Sheridan lives on GetMoreSports.com, but we're sponsored by BetDSI.com, and if you're listening from overseas, it's BetDSI.eu. And again, if you make a deposit of up to $1,000, they're going to match it. Bang! Just put in bonus code BBALL1000. It's BBALL1000. They'll match it up to $1,000, and then you double your money, and you got a lot of money to play around with, and you go have fun with your bets. And if you listen to this show, you're probably going to put some money on somebody getting an eagle at 5-1. I might have to do that myself. But the fellas, it's been a pleasure having both of you on. And again, on GetMoreSports.com, you can also hear another podcast with Clark Burrows and Scott Cooley talking about this Tiger versus Phil $9 million match. We got a lot of content up there, audio content and written content on the match that's coming up. So, again, Ron Cyrak, thanks for coming on. He's Ron Cyrak, at Ron Cyrak on Twitter. and take a look at his website, ronsirach.com. He's been covering the game for, 36 years.
Way too long.
And there's no such thing as way too long. You can retire and write your book when you're 85. And Scott Cooley, thanks also for coming on. Scott runs the show at GetMoreSports.com, and Scott works very closely with the folks at the book in Costa Rica at BetDSI.com. So, fellas, with that being said, we're going to close it up, and we'll see you. Well, if you guys want to buy it, we can all talk about this again after we buy it and watch it on the air. But for now, that's going to be a wrap, and I'll be back at you again with another podcast that'll probably be focused on basketball. LeBron James is making his comeback game tonight in Cleveland, and that's some must-see TV if you ever heard of it. So with that, we're going to close. Again, Ron Sirach, Scott Cooley coming on, and we're going over and out.